Okay, good evening everybody then. Thank you for your attendance. We'll get straight on with the agenda. So, have we got any apologies?
An apology from Councillor Haynes, who isn't very well, Chair.
Okay, happy to accept that, councillors.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely, thank you. Minutes of previous meeting, happy to approve those.
Yep.
Yes. Those, thank you. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interests and any other registrable or non-registrable interests? You shake their head, I'll take that as a no. Any declarations of party whip?
No.
No. Questions under scrutiny committee procedure 11.16?
Not submitted,
thank you. Okay then, we'll get straight. So I'm going to have an update on the original financial settlement, or the financial settlement now, my apologies.
No, it is it's still the provisional financial, strictly speaking, it's a provisional financial settlement. Usually varies by nothing compared to the final financial settlement. That will come in February, so that usually comes just before our final budget, but it usually doesn't change. So it is the provisional financial settlement. The big picture is between the financial settlement and particularly essential, the extended producer responsibility funding, sort of net. It actually works out about the sort of overall numbers and funding works out at very much the same sort of in the same sort of total. So overall, the total that we have in the draft budget is likely to be very similar to when we finally work it out for the final budget. There is some calculation we have to do, particularly around business rate retention. So we have to wait for the NNDR 1 form, which we've actually got this year. And then we have to wait for some final numbers off the business rate system, which takes a bit of time. But overall, I think it's going to look similar. In the detail, the actual government, the sort of mix of the target business rate retention plus government grants is the settlement is so-called cash flat based on core spending power. Now, core spending power is a measure that includes council tax and the government always assumes that the council tax element within the total core spending power calculation is a maximum increase. So when you actually work that through, it means we're getting about £390,000 less in that area, and with the sort of balance made up by council tax. On the other side of it, we had, in terms of food waste and extended producer responsibility, we assumed in the budget that we would get £400,000 income, extended producer responsibility, and we'd also get about 1 million compensation for the implementation of food waste, and what we've actually got is about 1.65 million extended producer responsibility. And then there's also some bits and pieces around which we don't necessarily know, but there is some additional funding we will get, compensation for food waste implementation. We don't know what that bit is yet. There's also some amounts for employers' national insurance compensation as well, and we don't know what that bit is yet, but when you add all those things together, I'm expecting it to come out very similar in total to what we had. So I suppose the big sort of summary is it's going to look similar to what we had in the draft budget, so no need to panic and redo a lot of the recasting.
Can I just check? I'm supposed to raise my hand.
Go on, Kathleen.
So the 1.65 million, is that the capital up front?
No, it's different. This is income, and in, which potentially is ongoing, but this is the income from extended producer responsibility. So this is the amount we are due to get next year. Things move on. So in terms of food waste implementation, we've had a capital amount which isn't going to cover all of the capital expenditure that is going to be required. So, and a lot of that capital expenditure is subsumed within the 1 million or so that Serco are going to charge us for the food waste implementation, so mainly the canisters. But when you add it all together, it works. There will be, we do believe there should be some compensation, so that we've now been told we're not going to get any additional capital amount from what we've already had, but there should be some compensation amount, which we don't know, for things like, it will cover things like communications, warehousing, so it doesn't cover buying the canisters, but we've obviously got to warehouse them, distribute them all, so there should be some money for that, but we don't know yet. So I'm not expecting is probably the wrong word. I'm not guessing it's going to be near the million, but I am guessing it's going to be something. So sort of all those bits together, I think by the time we sort of add all the bits together, I'm not concerned that they're going to be materially under, and I don't think they're materially over either. It's all a bit, the extent of producer responsibility and the compensation for implementation of food waste, that they're actually different things from the settlement, but again, they're all part of a package of things we weren't sure about, but as it transpires, I think we'll be overall okay.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions? So if I could just elaborate a little bit more on that then, Tom. So the cost of, say, the canisters, which sounds like that's going to be the biggest lump of money. Have we had that already then, or is that just
confirmed? So the timing of what we knew. So we had some capital up front. So this was the amount, and that only actually covered the vehicles. It didn't cover the canisters. So we obviously, along with everyone else, every other council, saying we need some more, because the cost of the vehicles is, it doesn't cover it. And then the government then gave us a little bit more and said that's your lot. So we're a bit of a shortfall on capital, but the extended producer responsibility allowance was quite, we got a local government association calculation which did suggest it was well over a million, and quite frankly I didn't believe it, but actually it has come out at that level, so it's sort of 1.649 or 65 million, so I can't remember quite what the final bit of that is, but it's over 1.6 million, so that was positive, and we are supposed to get some revenue contribution as well. So within our cost, that whole implementation, within the Serco cost, there was, like, I think it was called Action 68 or Point 68, which was this, for the whole implementation, capital revenue is about 1.06 million, so literally over a million. So that's a bit we were hoping to be fully compensated, so we won't be, but we'll say we're ahead on the EPR money, and we will get some, we should be due some revenue money, but according to the team, we probably won't know that until towards the end of March. The way the government works with these things is actually to find out how much money is left and then divide it up, rather than, they won't ask us how much it costs, there'll be a pot and there'll be, they'll just divide it up. This is how the National Insurance compensation is working, is 515 million across all authorities, but how that's necessarily going to be distributed, we don't know. There's an outline calculation. It talked about county authorities, or sort of combined authorities, which we don't know about, and it's silent on HRA, so.
So again, just while we're on that, the cost of these items in, like, vehicles, the canisters, whatever, are we sort of tied down on those price-wise? Because obviously
we've ordered the vehicles, so we know what we've got there. So that, we obviously went through the framework and tried to get the best, an appropriate deal. But the problem is, of course, every council's buying all these at the same time. So. Bit of a challenge. So we really have no choice but to buy the vehicles. They are, again, Matt would be the expert on this, or Theo, but they're smaller, smaller and got different material handling characteristics than the big wagons. So, but we've got the vehicles in, we've got the vehicles, Circa will run them. But again, there's canisters which we haven't, which you know, weren't fundable, weren't covered by the capital allocation. So
wait to see on those then, really.
Well, I think there will be something, but although it was denied and it's been denied over 2 or 3 years, although allegedly the extended producer responsibility funding wasn't supposed to be linked to the settlement, sort of feel it probably was in a way. Mm-hmm. Again, that's just my personal speculation.
So really what you're saying then is we're not entirely tied down on everything, but it looks like
we know I think the level of variation within the total, and we know the 1.6 million EPR, so we've got that in writing. We know the £1 million, we know what we've put in the budget, which was reasonably prudent. We know what we've got on the settlement. There are some bits around the edges on NMDR retention, but again, we're pretty strong on that, to be honest. We know where we are with it. You're just always waiting for stuff to come off the system, and sort of you don't get a real time report. You have to run a special report on the system which compiles it, and it's things like how much empty property relief we have to offer, etc. So those sort of things can make the overall situation vary. But I'm pretty comfortable that we're going to be pretty, you know, close to the overall budget numbers.
Okay. Anything for you, Paul?
Just thinking about solar, Simon, and I picked up the point that it says in here about the fact that any future, well, the previous suggested approach is not going ahead because
solar power,
connection to the grid.
Yep.
But now and any future case would need to obviously pass on its own merits.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of activity in this area now, increasingly. A lot of authorities are looking at local area energy planning and being generators themselves.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering if any early thoughts being given to that. And if not, I can advise, because it's part of a project that I'm working on.
Right, I mean, in terms of I think as part of the part of what we're looking at in terms of the assets, so in terms of Southfield, looking at sort of energy and how we make our assets greener, it is part of that. In terms of energy generation, that would have been our solar power plan. I did make a joke of hydroelectric schemes on the Soar, only to find out it was actually a hydroelectric scheme on the Soar near Sutton Bonnet. Actually, I don't think it's quite as wound down in terms of scale, but there is, you know, but solar was the one we were looking at. So you know, there's no doubt others. I don't know whether the one little whopper generates much in the way of wind power. I don't know quite what that powers actually, but there's no doubt other things we can look at.
And other leaders sort of been looking at opportunities, and whenever you do this, obviously you have to have a business case, and if we need to raise capital, then you've got to look at the income over time. So we have done this exercise a few times, but nothing's come up which the business case is justified doing it. But it's fun if you think there's an opportunity, if you raise it, we can get Justin to look at it and do a potential mm-hmm. business case for it.
Well, there's definitely an opportunity. The opportunity would actually be to sell that energy to other members of the community.
Yeah, but it's what's the site, you know, and, you know, is it an existing facility or is it just, you know...
What I'm saying is we want these to be connected to the grid.
Yeah.
Because we could sell the energy that we're producing ourselves as long as we can store it ourselves.
Okay. Well, I suggest, you know, do contact the leader, because it is something we're interested in.
Didn't we a few years ago look at a site in conjunction with the university?
There was a site that I think it was known as Allsops Tip, which it still might be known as Allsops Tip, but that's one that was the obvious one we had. But again, connectivity is the key, is a key problem. You know, in terms of selling it to the community, you know, I guess that's something to look at. Presumably the connectivity is to some sort of local network rather than the grid. You know,
kind of bob in it, they're supposed to be getting their future electricity from the energy from waste place in Shepshed. That's what they're talking about.
Yeah, I think that's logical. I think the University Council levy. I think that's what they're talking about. I think selling into the community. I think they've got some schemes in London. I think how it worked is they had a specific housing development, and then the housing was completed, and then the sort of electric supply was all done like that. I think that's probably potentially the way you would do it, rather than just connect to some existing housing arrangement and sort of try and sell and have to sell and have to bill individual customers. I'm not sure that would be quite so easy, but.
But the other way is to come together as a community, fund it as a community, and generate it for that community, and that's the other possibility.
Have you spoken to Bev Gray about this at all? Because she's obviously the Green, the member for Green Things, really. So
I'll send Bev a
member for Green Things.
Please quote that.
I don't know. Well,
so
this is being recorded.
I'll bundle past with a magnet later. That way,
that's right. So if Shrek applies for housing benefit, then Councillor Gray is going to be involved in his case, I imagine.
One point, which is, you'll know, as a bugbear of mine, has any further thought been given to this planning situation of either people being paid more in some way without causing ourselves problems, or in future budgets an allocation being properly applied that takes account of the subcontractors' fees as they actually are? What thoughts being given to that?
So in terms of the budget, I think Councillor Ransford spoken about this as well. So in terms of the budget monitoring, when we get to that, we'll be looking to split out, come up with a budget for agency fees and salary costs. It's quite complicated. So I suspect in practice we won't be necessarily that close to it, but I guess we'll be closer than having in the existing practice, which is to budget agency costs as nil. So we'll be some way out rather than all the way out, which I guess will be an improvement of sorts. In terms of the sort of paying grading and the overall HR policies, it's something that's always live for consideration, but there are no specific proposals in train at the moment.
Then the other point is around commercial income generation. Now, our finances are pretty good, so it's not as if we necessarily have to have that. So it's not as, the imperative is not as great as it has been. And it does seem to have dipped a little bit compared to, certainly our expectations of it compared to what it's been previously. What thought are we giving going forward to raising greater commercial income?
Well, I think we are looking at opportunities, and again, we looked at like the rushes recently, which came up, and we put in the business case, or Justin led that, and we put one forward. But you know, we have a limit saying it's got to make finance sense, and that's limits how much we can put in.
Yeah.
And I think there's a few others at the moment which we're potentially looking at, but obviously it's different to what it used to be. We can't buy office blocks in your Knoxwich anymore, so it's got to be something which is beneficial to the community. So I'm not sure. Those, I know we were looking at a couple at the moment.
Yeah, there's one or two that came up. So we do look at it. The anything we get is going to be more likely. It will have to justify itself as a regen or economic development opportunity. It will have to be in the borough, I think, because that will be the rules of the prudential code that we operate under. Because we will need to. Any substantial amount we would need to borrow. It was sort of just 1 million, that's the sort of thing we can finance, but as soon as you get into the bigger numbers, which are more likely, 5 million plus, then we'd basically be committed to borrowing. And then there's other work we do on. I mean, the Leader's very keen on looking at fees and charges, so we're always looking at fees and charges and seeing what opportunities are in there. Obviously, you can't just simply put all fees and charges up, but there are things we are looking at there and continue to do so, to be absolutely honest.
Do you think it would be wise to review those? I mean, you said somewhere that they'll be reviewed from an inflation perspective in future.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. I think it's a two-stage thing. To look at somewhere we've obviously lapsed and we're historically behind what is the commercial norm, and some of our charges next to private are very much out of step. But again, we're very sort of aware that big rises cause big complaints. So there's got to be a certain amount of stepping. But the idea is to raise them to what we think is reasonable and then putting an inflationary thing on top. So we're not doing this periodically, having a big bang and getting everybody upset about it. So that's kind of the aim going forward.
Do you think, on an annual basis, do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, with the plan or mechanically, the plan is to do a delegated decision every year covering all charge based on inflation. As Councillor Ashcroft said, this when we look at the sum of, some of the car parking charges haven't gone up for some time, so there's a bit of a step change there. But again, it's often a challenge if you're sort of trying to catch up, and then the headline is, charges go up 35% or whatever.
One thing you mentioned, which is a good point, is that if it's a delegated decision, then it doesn't have to go through all the mechanisms that we do. So if we can get it so it's just inflation, we can just get it as a delegated, then it should be a much simpler process just to keep the charges current, basically.
Okay. That's it for now.
Just a couple of things that we raised in the last meeting as sort of budgetary risks, just so we can sort of tick the box, if you like, go down it. The grant fund to bespoke, the extended producer on spirit,
yep.
Food waste, service demand on homelessness and provision in particular is a risk that we was in the last report. Mm-hmm. Are we any further on that, or are we any more secure on that? Or
there's potentially some additional funding which will cover additional demand. I don't think it's going to help our budget, so there is some additional nationally allowed funding. I mean, homelessness is just one of those things that we have to monitor it through the year. It sort of peaks and trough. I think if you were to sort of model it over the years, I think when I first started here, actually it was very high, and then we got it over the years, we got it to reduce, and then over the last probably when we had the COVID and everyone inside, and then we had some money for that, but I think generally over the last 4 or 5 years has been a sort of upward trend. So obviously it's something we try and manage, but it is one of those areas where it is demand led. We have statutory responsibilities, so it's difficult to ration. Trying to manage demand and be effective in the provision as best we can, but there are limits to what we can do. But at the moment, where we are in terms of budget monitoring, I'm not sensing there's a big problem at the moment. But it's not to guarantee that my margin or the situation is not looking a bit different. I mean, part of it is we don't know how cold the next few months is. I mean, we could end up, depends on what the flooding's like actually. I think last year we could be taking a bit of a bath on what we need to provide over the next few weeks, depending on the sort of flooding goes.
But the Leader did announce we did get some extra.
Yes, we did.
So, yeah. But the idea is it won't affect the budget, it just improve the service really.
Yeah, I think it's.
Okay. And the other one we highlighted was supported living.
Yeah.
Obviously, the budget has rent increases in there, doesn't it? But that we covered money.
I sort of remain medium term optimistic on this one. I think we will land, I think we will possibly land on a positive solution. So I think, again, we've been speaking with Co-op's Arms, who do say that they are relatively close to being able to sign up with a registered provider, which provide an umbrella which will enable us to reclaim 100% of the housing benefit costs, which we can't at the moment. So, you know, reasonably positive about that. We're talking of a timeline maybe within a few months, which is all positive, but we have sort of heard a little bit of it before, which is, so within the budget numbers, we are assuming a broadly an as-is situation. The risk compared to previous years is lower because the big rent increase, they put in a sort of 100%, and we went through the detailed negotiation. We landed on 10%, which wasn't ideal, but that doesn't mean that having been through this with big exercise, future rent increases are probably going to be 5-10% sort of around inflation. They won't be able to put in a 100% rent increase. Doesn't seem a plausible thing that they could feasibly claim now. So there's, I think, quite a bit of the upside of the downside risk has gone, but there's still a bit of a risk. And of course, if someone buys, if someone ends up buying Ramada and creates a supported, charitable supported living facility there, then that would bizarrely represent an opportunity or a cost mitigation plan to buy that before someone else did and then burn it or something.
I've got another one. Government's just announced that this is an old issue, and it nearly became an issue, but it didn't get quite put into place by the last Conservative government. But the new Labour government says that all properties will have to be Band C for 2030. Band C, EPC,
right.
C, right. By 2030. Last time we looked at this, and it was a long time ago, there was a huge cost.
Mm.
Has any thought been given to what the cost will be? Because if it's by 2030, we're going to have to save up for this probably. When I looked at it as a landlord, it was about £15,000 to go up one grade from D to E, and E to D,
yeah.
D to C. So given how many properties we've actually got, this is going to be and I remember the figures, it was frightening.
Yeah, so that's an HRA issue. So the answer is I don't know. I know that we are working with Savills, is it? We're working with,
Savills.
It is Savills, is it? So we're working with Savills on the 25-year business plan, so that will be, So I assume that they would have that in place. The numbers that the 25-year business plan for the HRA produce are utterly horrendous. But part of that is when you project anything over 30 years and you make some assumptions about inflation and cost increases and rent increases, and if your cost increases are a percent above the rent increases, then you rapidly, with the amounts of money involved, you rapidly become a big shortfall. But yeah, if that is the rule that we have to do that with all our housing stock, then that will become challenging.
And we need to think about it now, obviously, because we may need to put money aside, I would have thought.
Well,
I know it's certainly been mentioned again, I don't know the details, but certainly in the HRA discussions, it's certainly been mentioned, and I assume it's something that Savills will then model, so they need to model the solutions for us, basically.
Yeah, there's a little bit of flex within the HRA, but what it means is there's a limit. The assumptions on rent increases are critical, actually, because the more we can increase rent, the more that will support borrowing we'll need to invest in the stock. So we'll have a total pot of money we can invest in the stock, and what statutory we'll have to do, and then what's more optional will be the bits which we won't want to necessarily, but the bits we'll have to look at. But again, you sort of change the assumption. It's a bit like the sort of actuarial thing of pensions. You just assume people are going to live a year longer or a year shorter, and yeah, it makes a big difference. So, but we will have to have a look at that. That's a sort of, yeah, that's obviously a more medium term issue than the moment. I think 2030 does feel, well, that feels a little bit challenging, but just even in terms of getting contractors to do that, but we'll see. I don't know what the existing stock condition is. Maybe it is all, maybe a lot of it is EPC at the moment. I don't know that, to be fair. EPC C, maybe.
I doubt it. But, yeah, I don't know.
I think a lot of what Savills are doing, I think the condition survey is a big part of that. So, you know, obviously, the better the existing condition, the more doable, or the easier the upgrade will be.
Back to you.
Back to me.
Chair.
I think, anybody else have any further questions? Oh, Councillor Lenny.
Yeah, sorry. I noticed last time, I've been checking through the last meeting minutes, and my little note that I took from the stuff that we had there, and we've got no information about the government funding for the AWABS law at all. So is that something that we know now, that we'll get any money to cover it, because we're being forced to actually do all the upgrading and checks, aren't we, this year? Well, the next financial year, as I understand it.
Well, there's a mould and continuum now.
Yeah. To be honest, the short answer is I don't know. I've got a folk memory that we're putting measures in place to address the mould and damp in advance of knowing what additional funding we're going to get. Again, that will be an HRA. That's part of the HRA. So I think you know, if Pete Oliver was here, he'd no doubt be able to give you a better answer.
Well, I think I know the team's been put together. Things, but I thought it was just from around funding at the moment.
I think it is. I think it is. On the assumption we've got to do something, and we're anticipating some funding that will help cover it. But again, how much and when, I'm not aware of at the moment.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, if there's no further questions then. Thank you for the update. We now, as a panel, have to come up with a recommendation.
Do you need us to?
I don't think we do, to be honest with you. Not unless you want to preempt.
I'm happy either way, but I won't be upset if you want me to go.
Yeah, if you need to get up, particularly this one, you've been up since 3 this morning, haven't you?
It's my traditional first Monday night back. Yeah, if you're happy to entertain yourselves.
Yeah, we'll just draft a few things together.
Sounds fine.
It's all pretty straightforward.
If you're like, you need to recommend the pay rise for the Section 151.
That's
I think I might as well leave as well. Lovely. Thanks, actually.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you both.
Thank Cheers. You.
Right then, Laura, what would we like to say?
Well, I'd like to know when we've what's the exact date when we're going to finalise this thing?
We've not got very long, so it's
probably
going
tomorrow.
It's going to screen commission on Monday. So ideally, you let me know tonight roughly what you'd like to put in. It doesn't have to be a recommendation. Last year we just had a conclusion, a statement that we sort of said at the meeting, and then you gave delegated authority to the chair to just check that over after I'd done it before it went to scrutiny commission, because we won't be meeting again. So it's really a question of saying, if you'd like to make any conclusions or recommendations, us know now. Okay. And then I can put them into...
What we more or less did last year was we tried to put some positives in there, and then obviously just raise a few potential hurdles, which I think is probably what we'll probably do, because this isn't particularly
contentious, I don't think, is it?
No.
No.
So, yeah. So, fire away then, Paul, if you want to let Laura know what you want.
Okay, so, I mean, these are the five things I came up with today, really, which I got decent answers for, but I still think it's worth clarifying to them. So the first one is to investigate local area energy planning more rigorously to determine what options there are for energy cost reduction and energy generation and therefore cost and therefore income.
Okay.
So that's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second is to consider increasing salary levels of planning officers without causing problems on job rating in order to secure more full-time planning officers as opposed to subcontracted planning officers.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, shift to subcontracting planning officers and budgeting this accordingly.
When you say subcontract, you mean agency?
Yeah, sorry.
No, I'm just checking that's what you mean, yeah. Or shift to budgeting for it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
More vigorously investigate opportunities for commercial income generation,
yeah,
including regeneration in the local area.
Yeah.
Fourth is kind of said they're going to do, but they're not quite sure about, which is this annual basis for price increases and inflation. Do we want to make a recommendation that they should definitely do that? Because I think we should, to be honest.
Is it a budgetary consideration? Because they're doing it, aren't they, at the moment? Maybe it's not. Maybe it's going forward.
They said they're thinking of doing it, they're not said they're not actually going to do it.
You could say you welcomed the comment that that was going to happen, Ron.
Yeah, okay. That's it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, welcome the comment that fees and charges would
be reviewed on an annual basis.
Based on inflation.
Yeah, and reviewed on
moving
an annual
forward,
basis.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure about the delegated decision making. I don't know what we think about that panel, but maybe it doesn't really matter. Maybe that will come up anyway.
It's a stranger, isn't it? Because obviously things like parking fees, you wouldn't increase them every year anyway, would you? Because you'd be forever changing signs, and then you know if they're only going to go up 3.5%, then a pound, you know, it's going to go up to one, you know, a pound and threepence, and it's not, it would be.
Yeah,
viable to do that.
No, you're probably right.
And I think obviously like rent is a different matter because it's a larger sum of money. So
have I gone in with my scrutiny panel, scrutiny committee, everyone? They said when we were going through the parking charges that they wouldn't be, they'd be reviewing it every year, but until it reached a point where you could say, yeah, you can put it up by 10 or 20p,
yeah,
an hour,
yeah,
that's when they would put the fees up.
It's a good point. So there's like a step change required for certain things, and what you're saying is you review it, but it's like when companies pay out royalties, you know, they only pay it out
when they reach a certain level.
Yeah. So
it was a suggestion that fees and charges would be reviewed every year, but then would be increased as appropriate in line with inflation. It's the as appropriate, isn't it?
Yeah, we say yeah, we welcome that.
Yeah.
However, the panel notes that some charges, for example, car parking charges,
yeah,
may not be increasable on an annual basis.
Yeah, okay.
On using inflation.
That's
and
fine.
That they would need to be increased by on a step change basis to make more logical sense. Anyway, something along those lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was number five,
Kirsten? Five was to model, they may be already doing this. I think they are already doing it, but we're not seeing anything about it. That's the point, really. So to provide an indication of the cost of the regulatory change to EPC ratings being required at level C or above by 2030.
Yeah.
And the impact that will have on the HRA fund.
Okay, so that's the concern of the panel, that you're yeah. highlighting that's a concern and asking for it to be yeah. indicated that that's been addressed or looked
yeah.
at.
Yeah, and but this is especially important because it impacts on rent increase decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Paul. I just started off while I was while we went for the meeting, and to sort of try and put it in a bit of a sort of positive light, I started off jotting down that we find ourselves in a fortunate position as income has remained strong this year, supported by good returns on investment due to higher than expected interest rates and continued income from the business rates pool reserve, which I think are our two main successful income streams. I noticed in the report we'd actually mentioned that
which two income streams?
I said the interest from the investment yeah. and the business rates pool.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the B2. I think it's worth pointing out that, and again, I took a couple of sentences out of there. In common with public and private sector organisations, the council has suffered from cost inflation and the loss of income streams that can be attributed to the economic situation. And obviously, inflation is going to be quite a big point this year, I think, and that could really affect the budget in. You know,
thinking of
everything in the budget. Yeah, I see. Well, cost of materials.
Yeah.
They're all looking like they're going to go up and not come down. So I think it's worth flagging that as a potential.
I think it is too.
The big two that we pointed out originally were the extended producer responsibility and the food waste. Now Simon seems very very relaxed about both of those items. So whether we steer away from that. As seem comfortable about it. It's do we flag it or don't we flag it?
It's still a bit up in the air, really, isn't it?
It is. And can you remember the last meeting, guys, when we talked about it, we still were a bit in the dark about what the long term answer was going to be. I think if we make a note on it, at least we settled our conscience on the matter, and then when it comes for further scrutiny, at least they know how we feel about it. Does that make sense? At least we've made a point to raise it.
So I think that's an observation then, Laura.
So just noting that that position with those two things is still not certain. You just want
yeah.
to know that
they're an area
case.
Of risk.
Yeah.
So right. Until it's confirmation received.
Yeah.
Do we say something about, I mean, obviously this panel, what they constituted, but can members of the panel be provided with information, future information as this becomes available?
We could ask
yeah.
members of the council to be made aware of any future information as it comes in, I think.
That's yeah. in relation to those two items, the
yeah.
extended, yeah, okay. Yeah, we can make a note that that's, yeah.
And I think another note I did make was the big unknown really in the council's budget is the cost of the agency staff. And I know Paul's alluded to it there, but really, you want to think if we can flag that up as being a concern, because you know if that's going to be over £1 million, isn't it?
That was specifically in planning, wasn't it?
And it's
yeah.
more in planning than anything else.
90% planning.
Yeah.
And I know in one of the reports, Simon actually highlighted that a budgetary risk is one of the material shortfall in significant income streams. Such as planning. So again, I think possibly we tie that in because that's the big
yeah.
one. So.
I mean, well, we've never asked about this, but the fact that this is the situation means that demand for planning must be pretty awful. The question is, what impact is that having on development control and all the rest of it?
I think it's significant. I mean, myself and Jane Louise are on planning, and
yes.
there's a lot of planning applications going in, because obviously not so many people are moving now. get a mortgage, etc., etc. But there's such a backlog, I think it's fair to say, that whether the new planning MPPF, where you know maybe things will be pushed through a bit stronger,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the government's also talking about giving us more training officers, aren't they?
I suppose the question here is,
where are they going to come from?
Yeah, well, that's the one. What's the number of the average number of days that it takes for a planning application to go through? Because that's a regulated requirement now, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it is. I'm not entirely sure. Do you know, James? I think it depends what it is.
I think it's eight for small plans, like household plans, and then 13 for big plans.
And then I guess the question would be, well, to what extent are we meeting that, and how well are we meeting that compared to other councils? And
if well, it depends. Yeah, it depends really, because things where they just put in an outline plan, you've got to meet it, but then you have another bite of the cherry when they come up with their detailed reserve matters. And then often it just takes so long for them to come up with proper information for you to be able to make a decision.
Yeah.
So it's a revelation when, I mean, I've never been on planning before, and it's a revelation to me. But it's not easy. And we were clobbered this Christmas and the previous year with, I think we had Michael Gove's plans. First Christmas I was on planning, and then we've got this new government thing coming through, and you can't cope all the stuff that's already there. Once you get that new regulation in front of you, it's from that day that you have to ensure that any plans that are incoming do match with the new regulations. And of course the developer don't know what the new regulations are until the same day as ours, but it's so difficult to just change everything to fit new regulations and make a decision on the same day, because that's why we're having another planning meeting this week to address the one that we couldn't do before Christmas, because it landed on the day that we were supposed to be doing the decision. It's bonkers, really.
Robin.
Thank you, Mark. The other thing, the other elephant in the room, sorry I couldn't get on straight away because of my computer. Paul and Jane have already kind of alluded to it anyway, but Paul, especially about recruitment, I know we've discussed this before. If and when we become a unitary authority as well, it's going to get even worse. And who do we then adhere to, and whose standards do we adhere to? If we get our house in order now, I get the right people in position, in post, and go towards a more full-time recruitment rather than a part-time recruitment system, at least then, if our systems are in place, then hopefully we'll be better off for it in the long run anyway, and we'll be saving ourselves some money. Whereas if we keep doing this sort of ad hoc approach, then sort of trying to play catch-up with more, rather than be regressive, rather than ahead of the curve, I think we're going to have this situation forever on end. Does that make sense? Like, I think if we actually have a budget set aside for full-time members of staff who actually are here, and like Paul said, get the best, pay the money for the best, then that's going to save the council long-term a lot more money than it is keep paying out for people
I think having been through this a few times with finance, and it's probably more of a finance and performance sort of question, but... They have to pay to certain scales, and that's the bottom line of the issue, you know, and they're trying golden handshakes and extra holidays, but really the problem is you can go, you know, our planners can go and work for a planning agency and earn more money for doing less work.
But I just think it's an aspiration we should be having, and I think Paul's comments earlier on again, and also the other night as well, when we all met previously, can't agree more. I think we've got to do something as a council to try, because in the end, it will save money. I know it sounds like it's a lot of money to shell out in the first place, but keep paying people around on the bank to do the same job, you're going to clear off anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? If we can try and have some contingency plan for this, I think in the end we'll be better off for it. So that would be sort of one of the things I think should push it more, personally.
Chair, I think at the end of that discussion, I think the point that the second point that Councillor Baines made was specific to the budget in that respect, which is probably what the panel needs to focus on. So I'll make sure that's included.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, anything else to add, anybody else? Now's your chance, don't hold back.
I do need a decision from the panel, if that's okay, Chair, that they're happy, once I've put all this into the report, that they're happy to delegate me agreeing it with you, if that's okay, just because of the time scale involved, if that's okay with the panel.
Is that okay with everybody? All right, then?
Yes, we certainly trust you.
It's all right, Jane, we can hear you. You're on, go on.
Are we to say that despite some of the uncertainty in the income and the budget items, the medium term finances in the medium term is fairly positive?
Yeah, I think we'll probably open with something along those lines. Just to sort of either top or tail the report.
Yeah.
We'll leave that to Laura.
Put something into that, because as a council, we're performing quite well financially, aren't we?
Yeah. I think we'll acknowledge that.
Let's be very clear. It's not well per se. It's just better than we'd expected. So, I think what we've got to say is, it's not as if we're in rude health. We're not got surpluses. Our deficit's not as bad as it was going to be. In fact, there is no deficit this year, and there was going to be, and the deficit's fast forwarded to next year, but it might not be as bad as that in the end. So I think we've got to be careful what we say here. We can say that it's better than that it's turned out better than we'd expected, and that's very positive. That shows good control on the part of the council, which I think is true.
But the reason
I've said that is because we do want the council to generate more income if it can.
Yeah.
And that's why we've said this bit about investigating opportunities more vigorously. But is there anything else? I mean, should we be recommending that we look, in view of the uncertainty and the likely increase in costs, especially national insurance costs, that the council investigate opportunities to trim budgets where possible? I would have thought that would make sense to say that.
We don't know what the government's going to bomb us, do we?
No, I'm not talking about cutting services, I'm just talking about cutting budgets where possible, because my interactions with Simon and others suggest that it isn't routinely looked at. Strategic procurement, other aspects, it's not routinely looked at. So service heads are not asked to look at how options to cut budgets where possible, and they could be. It would happen in any large organisation outside of the public sector.
Is that number six, Councillor
Baines? We could frame that up as we ask the SLT to do a review on potential savings,
That sounds kind of.
I like that. Good cop.
Like what Councillor
Baines
said.
Yeah. Put into James' terms.
Yeah. Okay. We're all good with that one.
All right. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Happy. Lovely.
Once we've got that sorted out, we'll be able to send you to our.
Yeah, so I'll turn the meeting finished.
Meeting's closed,
thank you.
Call it a minute.